Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining me today. Thanks for hanging around with me. My pleasure as always. You're going to be glad you did because we got Jim Copeland in the building, so to speak. Jim is director of the Center for Legal Policy at the Manhattan Institute for Public Policy Research. He's a longtime member of our Brain Trust and one of the smartest guys I know. Jim Copeland, welcome back to the show.
Thanks to be here, Jim.
It's good to have you back. Jim, and folks, I've asked Jim to join us to give us an update on where things stand in reconciling the losses that have been incurred and the claims that have been filed with regard to the Hurricane Katrina and the devastation that happened in New Orleans, in the Gulf states, especially Mississippi and Alabama too, but mostly they're arising around the failure of the levees in New Orleans. And Jim, I was down there almost a year and a half ago. I guess a year after the hurricane struck and the flooding happened, I took a tour around the neighborhoods, all circumnavigated the city of New Orleans, and saw the devastation. And Jim, it was it looked like an atomic bomb had hit the place. Have you seen it?
I haven't been there since the hurricane, and I certainly have heard those reports and seen the photographs. There's no question there was an amazing amount of damage.
It was mind-boggling to see the houses that, you know, where the water came up to the eaves. Some of them, you could see the water mark on the side of the wall on some of them. I was there a year after, as I said, and I'm just going to make an estimate that maybe 5% of the people that ever lived in those neighborhoods were there, and I'm going to say that there were maybe no more than that of the businesses that I saw in the outlying area that had been open at one time had opened back up. It was still total devastation, basically, in the neighborhoods. And Jim, there's no way to occupy those houses. I mean, tens of thousands of houses. There's no way to reoccupy those. And if you built them back, you'd have to build them 10 feet off the ground.
Right. I think that a lot of the areas, it's going to be difficult to bring them back. The damage was great. Most of the residents of these sorts of areas were not wealthy by any stretch or were quite poor. And I mean, New Orleans is having a difficult time coming back. My colleague Nicole Gelinas has looked into the crime numbers. The crime numbers there are staggering. The murder rate is, on a per capita basis, far above any other U.S. city.
That's not that much different from before Katrina, though. I mean, it is.
Well,
it is higher.
True. The per capita numbers are much higher, but some of that's because the total population is still so much lower.
Yeah.
And it looks as if a lot of the good, honest people, when they moved away, found jobs somewhere else and are not moving back. And so some of the folks that have migrated back tend to be the criminal element disproportionately.
The man who drove the bus to drive us around the area, I was there on an SBA meeting, Small Business Administration meeting, and the guy who drove us around on the bus drove us within two blocks of his house, and he pointed down the street and he said I used to live in a house down that street two blocks. He said I owned that house outright, didn't have a mortgage. He said now I live 90 miles up the road in Gonzales, Louisiana. And I said, are you going to move back? He said never. I said, how long did you live here? He said, I'm 62. I moved here. My family moved here when I was four. I lived here all those years. He said, but I'll never move back to New Orleans.
So I think they're having major problems with that. So there's no question there's been staggering damage. Now, what was interesting, and the litigation issue that I focus on and that you mentioned at the outset, last week the Army Corps of Engineers for the U.S. government came out with the total volume of claims that the federal government is facing stemming from New Orleans. Now realize this is different than the much publicized claims, many of which are valid, some of which are invalid, that have been filed against insurers and others. Mm-hmm. Those are contractual claims, and clearly where the individuals didn't have flood insurance and the damage was caused by flood or a combination of flood and wind, those individuals should have bought flood insurance, mm-hmm. and they're not entitled to recovery. There are other individuals that may be entitled to recovery. There's been a lot of litigation around those issues. But these claims are against the U.S. government, and they're precisely around the issue of whether the levees, the U.S. government is responsible for the damages because the levees failed.
Hasn't the Corps of Engineers basically claimed responsibility? Haven't they claimed ownership for the failure of the levees?
Well, I think they're going to try to settle a lot of these claims to the extent that the claims are due to levee failure, and the U.S. government, under traditional doctrine, the U.S. government has what's called sovereign immunity and can claim that, as can the states, in respect to a lot of these sort of monetary damages.
Meaning, Jim, that the government can't be sued?
In general, there's that principle. Now, in a lot of areas, the U.S. government has assumed responsibility, and the state governments have assumed responsibility. There's certain areas where the government obviously can be sued that trump sovereign immunity. Some of those are, say, equal protection claims, so that if the government were failing to protect black people and protecting white people, you know, those sorts of things, obviously they'd be subject to suit, a derivative from the subsequent of constitutional amendments, the 14th Amendment, what have you. But in a lot of these basic claims, the long-standing principle dating back to England, dating back to the old law,
right,
is that
Henry
the state
II.
Is a sovereign. And you can't
all the way,
sovereign,
all the way
but,
back
but in
to...
this sort of situation, the states opened itself up to suit.
Right.
Of course, the downside is, I mean, the states, obviously the Congress has appropriated money, there's efforts to try to rebuild down there, et cetera.
But the number is what's going to stagger our people. And folks, when we come back after these messages, I'm going to get Jim to give you the number. And there are two numbers, actually. The first one will blow you away. The second one is just not even plausible. Stand by, 20 after the hour. We'll be right back. I can't
imagine. Hello, this is Abraham Lincoln. Jim, I always feel better about myself after I'm on the show. I don't have any bouts of depression.
We're back. It's 23 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging around with me. Jim Copeland is our guest. He's director of the Center for Legal Policy at the Manhattan Institute. Jim, tell us about the Manhattan Institute and give us your website, please.
Certainly. The Manhattan Institute, for 30 years now this year, has been a policy research organization located in New York. We're committed to free enterprise, free markets, personal responsibility, and we've been over 20 years now in the business of looking at the U.S. legal system and seeing where litigation abuse happens, how the legal system has gotten out of whack in this country. The Manhattan Institute general website is manhattan-institute.org. You can also go to a couple of our websites focused specifically on legal policy. We have a web magazine and weblog that's updated every day with a host of individuals, think tank folks, academics, practicing lawyers, called pointoflaw.com. We also have a website, triallawyersinc.com, that has a series of reports we've put out specifically looking at the conduct of the lawyers and how they work together, mm-hmm. the types of major litigation that they've sponsored. And I think both of those will be illuminating to a lot of the listeners.
Absolutely. Check that out, folks, when you get a chance. Jim, I want to come back to the number. Folks, there are two numbers. We're talking about Jim and I have been talking about the claims against the government, These are not claims against the insurance companies, ladies and gentlemen. This is against the U.S. government because of the blaming the government for the failure of the levees in New Orleans. Jim, look, folks, I'm going to give you a number that will put this in perspective. And then, Jim, I want you to tell us what the first claim is. I'm talking about the regular claims. Folks, the U.S. economy in 07 was about $13 trillion. Jim, that's all production in the United States for a year. Jim, tell us what the claim is for not the big one, but the others. What are they total?
They total about $13-14 trillion, about the size of the U.S. gross domestic product. There are roughly 489,000 claims outstanding, which is a large number. It's larger than the population of New Orleans was at the time of the hurricane. It's not clear exactly where all these different derivative claims are coming from.
Now, these are people who want to sue the government for folks the equivalent of a little more than a full year of production by every man, woman, child, and company in the country.
Right. Now it's important to emphasize a lot of these claims may have some legitimacy and may not be astronomical in size. The numbers driven by the large claims, there are 247 claims out of that 489,000, so a small percentage, that are totaling $1 billion or more apiece.
And then there's one claim, Jim. Tell us about this one.
And then this is all excluding the one mega claim, which is the record-setting claim, which is obviously preposterous in size. There's not a lot of information known about this claim at this point, but there's one claim for $3 quadrillion, which is well over 100 times the size of the U.S. gross domestic product. Obviously, the federal government has deep pockets, but it doesn't have pockets that deep. The entire world economy doesn't have that deep. Obviously, that claim will never collect anywhere remotely close to the size of damages being sought, but it does exemplify how in our U.S. system claims can escalate in size. Other countries, the rest of the industrialized world where they have loser pays laws, often those laws are structured so that you lose if you don't get what you're asking for. Obviously, if you ask for $1 million and you only get a $1 nominal judgment, you've lost the case, even though you've nominally won.
Yeah.
And it's a way to keep the numbers down toward reality when lawyers are making claims, when you have those sorts of offset rules.
Is this going to clog up
a $3 quadrillion claim anywhere else?
Jim, is this going to clog up our federal courts for years to come?
It depends how the government tries to resolve them. The odds of some mass settlements of these claims are probably reasonably high. There's one lawyer that has over 60,000 of these claims himself. Mm. So we've seen a lot of the same sort of mass tort lawyering, aggregating claims, advertising, recruiting claims that we've seen in areas like asbestos.
So it's become a kind of a class action suit by pulling a bunch of little suits together.
Right. It's not a true class action because every individual's claim is very different, but it's what we would call a mass tort, where you've brought together lots and lots and lots of cases, and the attorneys that have lots of these cases may well strike a settlement deal. And of course, those homeowners will get something in that case. The attorneys will get a staggering sum.
Exactly. So what's this going to cost us? Half of that?
I can't imagine that ultimately it would settle for half the U.S. GDP. I think it'll be significantly lower, realizing again that fewer than 250 out of these claims, that it's almost 500,000, are the ones that are $1 billion plus. Mm. My guess is a lot of the smaller claims the government may settle with some stipulations. There's obviously going to have to be some proof of ownership, some proof of damages, et cetera.
Right.
And then some of the larger claims, there may be more negotiations. The government may litigate
Some of these people claiming them are small businesses. But either way, whatever the amount is, Jim, it's going to come out of the taxpayers' pocket.
That's right. Ultimately, it's you and me and everyone else around the country that's going to have to pay any damages that go out of these claims.
Hey, Jim, thanks for being here. Good job. Thanks for the report.
Thanks for having me.
We'll see you next time. Jim Copeland, ladies and gentlemen, with the Manhattan Institute. Quick break. Right back with Governor Pete DuPont. All of this day,
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.